In January, I always find it a little jarring to jump into the baptism of Christ. I mean, just last week, he was a baby, right? With the three wise men coming when he was 12 days old to present him with the gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. He's still in the stable with Mary and Joseph and in the manger. And all of a sudden now he's all grown up. John the Baptist is all grown up, and he's getting baptized as an adult. 30 years have passed in 1 week. And it's a completely different image that we have of Christ, from the Christ child to Christ the adult, launching into his ministry. And as we look at this passage, we see it's a very important moment. It's a very important moment for Christ. And as with many of the very important moments in the Bible, we see that it is filled with ancient imagery. Nothing that happens in this passage is an accident. None of the details are an accident. They harken back to ancient traditions. And that's important because what Christ is doing in this moment is tying the past to the present to the future. And we, when we have our ritual of baptism nowadays, we are hearkening back to those ancient traditions that Christ hearkened back to at this moment. And so I want to talk to you just a little bit about these. First of all, we see baptism as a covenant. It's a covenant. And this is an ancient tradition. We've seen other covenants in the Old Testament. We see the rainbow, God's covenant with humanity. We see circumcision, when God promised Abraham that he would be a nation of great peoples, a great nation of peoples, that he would have more ancestors than the number of grains of sand in the world. We see this concept of covenant. Just like when we are baptized nowadays, in the Christian tradition, we are entering into a covenant with God and with community to journey together. It's a covenant. We're in this together. We're in it forever. Once it's been made, no matter what happens in your life, you are still a member of this community. God will still love you and be there with you no matter what happens. Covenant, it's a sacred promise. It's a sacred bind. And we see the image of the Holy Spirit descending like a what? Like a dove. Not an accident. It could have descended like anything. It could have descended like a rock. It could have descended like a pigeon. It could have descended like a feather. It could have descended like a drop of water. It descended like a dove. That's important. Where have we seen doves before? Up there. That's right. God was anticipating stained glass windows thousands of years in the future and decided to make. Where have we seen the dove before? What is that dove doing? What? Noah's Ark. That's right. And doves were sacrifices. Those are both important imagery around doves. The first is Noah's Ark. After 40 days of flooding, Noah was trapped in the ark and he didn't know if it was safe to get out yet. He didn't know if there was land that he could land on. And so he sent out the dove. And the dove returned with an olive branch, the symbol of peace. This is important. The peace dove. And doves were also a sacrifice. It was something that people could use when they had to make their sacrifices at the temple. It was the smallest sacrifice you could make. It was the easiest to catch, the calmest, the sweetest, and the cheapest. So it was most accessible to the poorest of the poor. Okay, so in one image, we have peace, we have accessibility to the poor and to the outcast, and we have hope because in that ark, after 40 days of flooding and destruction, we had a beacon. We had a beacon. And we have the 40 days, which is exactly what Jesus goes into the desert immediately after this moment, is 40 days. Right? This is not an accident. So then we have the River Jordan. This is where he's baptized. The River Jordan features prominently in the Bible. We've seen it many, many times. Where have we seen the River Jordan? Who remembers a story about the River Jordan? Moses, yes. Moses led the people through the desert for how many years? 40, there's that number again. 40 years he led them through the desert. And then it was time for them to go to where? the promised land. And he did not go with them. He had to wait behind. But Joshua led the people over the River Jordan into the promised land after 40 years of wandering. Joshua crossed that river with them. Joshua took the Ark of the Covenant. Covenant. Am I right? You hear that? Ark of the Covenant. And the 12 tribes, their 12 representatives, stepped into that river, the waters parted, and they took the covenant across into the promised land. Joshua did that in the River Jordan. Now, are you aware that Jesus is the Greek spelling of that name? It's a very strange name because it's not really the sound of a Hebrew name, and Christ was given a Hebrew name. But when they tried to transliterate it into Greek, it didn't work because they didn't have the right letters for the right sound. So it came out Jesus. Do you know what his name actually was? Joshua. Joshua. And the River Jordan. And the Ark of the Covenant. And the 12 disciples and the 12 tribes. Not an accident that he was baptized in the River Jordan. We also see the River Jordan in the story of Naaman the leper. Do you remember Naaman the leper? The big old beefy guy. He was a military advisor to the king. He was the head of all the armies of the king of Aram, the king of the Arameans. He was huge. He was beefy. He was tough. He never lost a battle. He was supposed to be taller than everybody else, head and shoulders above everybody else. But he had leprosy. He had leprosy, and he could not cure it, and it was the bane of his existence. And so he was advised to go seek out the prophet Elisha to go and find a cure. And he was very hesitant. And he didn't like being told what to do. And he didn't like the advice that he was given. But he was told to go wash 7 times. Where? In the Jordan River. Which meant that he had to take off all his clothes, leave all of his wealth up on the top of the hill, obey the instructions of various servants and prophets from religions that were not his own. He had to get completely naked and go in that river. Muddy river. It's a muddy river. And humble himself to be able to wash clean. Because he didn't just have a leprosy problem, he had an attitude problem. And so in washing in the River Jordan, he found humility and healing and community and equality with all the people that he had been above all this time. Do you see that? It was an equalizing experience. We also see the River Jordan in the story of Elijah and Elisha. Do you remember these two guys? Let me tell you, there was a time, the first sermon I ever gave on Elisha, I called him Elijah the entire time. The minister had to pull me aside and say, you know you're mixing those two up, right? Elijah was the first one. Elisha was the guy who came after him. And as Elijah's time was coming to an end, Elisha made a request. He said, I've followed you all this time. When you go, I would like to have double your spirit. All of your spirit of God that you have that allows you to heal people and help people and do good in the community, that's what I want more than anything. And he says, well, if you're with me when I go, you can have it. And so Elisha had to stick to him like glue. Stick to him like glue so that when it was time for Elijah to go, he was right there with him. And at a certain point, Elijah requested that all of his entourage stay behind. He wanted to go be by himself for a little while. And Elisha said, okay, but I will come with you. And you know what they did? They crossed the River Jordan to have some space to themselves. Elijah was taken up in a whirlwind. Remember this? Taken up in a whirlwind. Elijah is one of the prophets, one of the few prophets that never died. He was taken up in a whirlwind. And he left behind his mantle, his cloak, his stole that he carried with him. And Elisha was right there when it happened. So Elisha got that spirit. And he got that mantle and he put it on. And then he had to go back across the river, back to all those people and tell them what had happened. But the river was full. So you know what he did? He took that mantle. Go ahead. He did not walk on water. No. He did not walk on water. Good guess, Hillary. Very close. He took that mantle. He smacked it on top of that river. The waters parted. And he walked through. He walked through. And he became a new leader. Because he'd been given the power to heal and to help and to prophesy and do all of these things that were going to make the world a better place. Not because he'd asked for power to win, power to succeed, power to dominate. He'd asked for power to help and to heal, and he got it twofold. And so there we see the River Jordan. So the prophet Isaiah talks about Israel being a light to all nations. We see that again and again and again in the Old Testament. The idea that this people would be a blessing, would be a beacon to all peoples, because it's so filled with peace and so filled with love and so filled with justice and equality, where everybody has a fighting chance and everybody supports one another in their journey, that everyone would want to flock to it. We see that again and again and again, that this nation will be a nation that is a light to all peoples. And in it, in the book of Isaiah, he talks about how someone will come. Someone will come to right all wrongs, to be there for the people, to bring justice, to bring peace, to be part of that beacon. And when God says, as Christ is in the water, you will be, this is my son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. We see this fulfillment of that prophecy, of that prediction. This light, this beacon, because Christ is not there alone. Do you realize that? We have this image of, oh, there's Christ, and then there's, you know, the Holy Spirit, the dove, coming down. Well, John is there too. And John is one of my favorite people in the Bible. He's a mess. He's like all dressed in camel hair. Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine? And he eats locusts and wild honey. He's climbing up in trees like swatting away bees and eating wax. Can you imagine? He's a wild card. This guy is crazy. And he's there with Christ and they're arguing about who's going to baptize who. Can you imagine? This is the holiest moment, right? This is the climax. This is the big thing everybody's been waiting for. And they're like, no, wait, were you going to, I thought that you, did you have the, wait, is your mic on? Hold on a second. Let me get my thing. Let me check my bulletin because I don't remember who was supposed to. Can you imagine? And everybody's watching because right before that, John is in another argument with other people. He's arguing with the Pharisees. And he's arguing with all of the Israelites that have come down to the river to see this spectacle, because it's a spectacle. And so can you imagine hundreds or even thousands of people lining the banks of the Jordan River. John's arguing with all of them while he's up to his hips, right, in muddy water, pointing his finger and calling them broods of vipers. And this is a spectacle, and here comes Christ into the muddy water to like try and figure out what's going to happen next. Everybody's watching this scene. Now, this is really important because this is supposed to be a cleansing scene, right? This is baptism. This is a cleansing. But they're in muddy water. Can you imagine? Now, there is an ancient tradition. It's not just in the Judeo-Christian tradition. It's in many traditions. The concept of the cleansing bath, the cleansing ritual, right? We saw it as new converts to Judaism would wash before they enter the mitzvah bath, right? We see it at the end. We see the wife of Uriah, Bathsheba, when David spies her. Remember what she's doing? She's doing her ritual cleansing that she did after her cycle every month. The women would have their cleansing ritual. And before women got married, there's an ancient tradition in the Jewish faith that they would have a mitzvah bath, a cleansing bath, with their mother-in-law to be there with them. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I see women cringing. They're just like, oh, really? Yeah, they would. They would. You know, I had a professor at one point at my seminary that talked about doing this, going through this when she was about to get married. Going through this tradition of being, she was in a synagogue, right? They had a special room with a tub for this. And she had to be there and do a ritual bath while her mother-in-law sat right next to her and watched the whole time. Can you imagine? But if you go back, way, way, way back to why they did this, I want you to imagine, at this point, lineage was everything. Patriarchy and the rights that were associated with the heirs were everything. Marriage was a covenant. It was really important. This was not something that people took lightly. And so when a woman was about to get married, She would have this cleansing bath and the mother-in-law would watch. Can you imagine why? You think it was to humiliate her? No. It was to verify some really important stuff that nowadays we can do with, you know, little sticks that you can... You can check things out. Thank you. Exactly. That's the scientific word for it. You check things out first, right? You can verify that she's really a woman. It's important. Okay? If lineage and grandchildren is really important, you want to make sure that that person your son is about to marry is really a woman. Right? That she has all the proper working equipment. Right? That she's physically capable. And that she's not already pregnant with somebody else's child. Right? This is important. Nowadays, we have little sticks, and well, you can go to the doctor and get this stuff checked out and be given a little printout for the mother-in-law. But back in the day, right, nowadays, you just wait a few years, and then you go on to the Maury Povich show, and you have, like, you know, is my baby's daddy? And, you know, reveal it. But back in the day, they had a different way of doing this. It was with a ritual bath. So when she went through this, she said it was, at first she was terrified. She thought this was going to be so embarrassing, so humiliating. But she and her mother-in-law bonded over this. Because they both, when she revealed her vulnerability like that, her mother-in-law also revealed vulnerability, and they began a conversation. They began a conversation, and it brought them closer than a lot of daughters-in-law and mothers-in-law ever become, because they had this shared moment. And so when Christ jumps into this muddy water to argue with John, who's already in the middle of like holding two or three arguments at a time with thousands of people, everybody's watching this. It's very much like this. You have the cleansing property of the ritual bath, but you also have that moment of examination, where the people can see, oh, this is a real guy. This person that John has been telling us about, this prophecy that Isaiah has been telling us about, that we've been hearing about, he's a real guy. He's really willing to jump into muddy water to be in covenant with us. He's really willing to humble himself and say, no, 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 you go first. No, 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 no. I'll just jump in there. We don't have to do this in a big fancy area, in a gilded room with a golden tub filled with purified water. I'm willing to jump into the muddy river just like every single one of you have done. If these folks were the mother-in-law, it would be a moment of examination. Do we want to go forward with this or do we not? No secrets anymore. We get to see exactly what we're getting into. We get to see exactly what's happening. We get to see exactly what kind of person this is. Someone who's humble. Someone who's truthful. Someone who's willing to let others go first. Someone who's willing to get his hands and his body dirty. Be just right there, right in there with the masses. Not holding himself apart. Right there. He has all the equipment that he needs to be able to go forward and serve in this position. We can see it with our own eyes, and it makes us closer and it makes us stronger. Because when he left that place, he had followers, he had people that were willing to be in covenant with him, because he was willing to be in covenant with them. And they were able to see exactly who he was and exactly what he was made of before they made that decision. That was important. That was really important. So when we think about Christ's baptism, when we think about our own baptism, when we think about that process that we have gone through, it's not just splashing water on our heads or full immersion, if that's what you did, if that's how yours went. We're talking about ancient, ancient tradition. We're talking about being in covenant with one another, just as Christ entered into covenant with us. We're talking about deep and important traditions around peace and hope and beacons of light. We're talking about a cleansing that not only washes us clean, but also heals us, that also humbles us, that can be a powerful transformation from one generation to the next, to bestow all that knowledge, all that wisdom, all of that powerful drive to heal and to help and to be compassionate in our communities, passing from one generation to the next. Because we're not baptized in a vacuum. We're not baptized by ourselves. I don't think anybody here sat in a room all by themselves and were just baptized, one person with a little tub of water. It's in community. Everyone is there to watch you go through this process. And in the process, you're humbled and you know that everyone else went through it too. They examine you not for your perfections, but for your imperfections. Because that's what this is all about. That's what makes us ready. And so when we see that Christ went through all of this in a river that leads us to the promised land that fulfills God's covenant and God's promise for us to be blessed, to be a blessing, to be part of a community and part of a world that God will never harm again. Never. To be fruitful and multiply so that we will constantly be growing. And God will always be using us to be blessed and to be a blessing within our community and in our world. This is baptism. This is the covenant. This is our tradition. This is what we practice when we were children, or if we were baptized as adults when we were adults. This is our hope for the future. Just as the river, as muddy as it was, it's always flowing. Ancient tradition, but with brand new water every single time. This is who we are. It goes back. You cannot go back far enough to find a time before this happened. We're part of a cloud of witnesses that spans millennia. We are the river. We are part of it, and it flows. Can I get an amen to that?